Welcome to the Soul Science Nutrition Podcast, where you'll discover that when it comes to your health, you're so much more powerful than you've been led to believe. And now, your host. She's a holistic nutrition and lifestyle coach, chef, author, and yogi, Christine Okezie.
Hello, and welcome to the Soul Science Nutrition Podcast. I'm Christine Okezie. Thanks so much for listening. Today's guest topic is such a critical health issue, one that doesn't get its due, but really fundamental when it comes to every single aspect of our health, and that's sleep. When we're sleep deprived, we simply can't function well. Sleep deprivation is associated with higher levels of stress, depression, anxiety, irritability, as well as poor coping mechanisms, memory, learning, performance, you name it. Sleep deprivation is also linked with increased risk of illness, and if chronic, can lead to major health issues such as diabetes, obesity, and high blood pressure. But like anything else, when it comes to making lifestyle changes, taking the steps to prioritize sleep and create those new supportive habits can be super challenging. Now, if this resonates with you, you're going to love my conversation with Morgan Adams. She's an accredited women's sleep coach with two advanced certifications in sleep science coaching. Following her own journey with sleep challenges, years of over-reliance on physician-prescribed sleeping pills, Morgan made it her mission to support women just like her to create new routines and strategies for better sleep and improve their overall health. Not only is Morgan a wealth of information, though, she's also a two-time breast cancer survivor and a strong advocate for prevention and integrating holistic strategies for cancer and other health issues. To learn more about her, visit her website, morganadamswellness.com, and there you can learn about her personalized private sleep coaching program. You can also download a free resource, Better Bedroom Checklist, a simple guide to help you transform your bedroom into a sleep sanctuary. I can't wait for you to listen in on this important conversation, and if you do like it, I'd be grateful if you have the chance to visit Apple Podcasts, hit the subscribe button, and leave a rating and review. It helps me keep the podcast growing. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and enjoy the episode. Hey, Morgan, great to meet you, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Christine. I'm excited to be here today.
Awesome. This is so cool. I am so excited to talk about this very, very, very important and juicy topic. Gets overlooked way too much, and I'm sure you'll agree with that, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So what was the catalyst or catalysts, honestly, for becoming a sleep coach?
Yeah, well, it kind of goes back to probably 15 years or so ago. Okay. I was in my mid-30s. And I had a personal crisis that we won't go into here, but basically what happened was it propelled me into a very intense bout of insomnia. And the only really solution that I had for it at the time was to take Ambien because that's what the doctor gave me. And I was dependent on Ambien for about 8 years. And the downside of it for me, and just this is my experience, is that I was very, very groggy like every morning up until close to lunchtime. And I would finally kind of wake up. And I did have several episodes during that time frame where I did binge eat at night, which is not good. I mean, we can talk about late night eating disrupting your sleep later, but that was definitely not a good scenario. And so, about 8 years into that, I had a kind of an aha moment. I started dating a guy who is now my husband, and he just made sort of a casual comment to me one night. He's like, you know, those pills you take before you go to bed kind of make you act like a zombie. It's kind of freaky to me. And I was like, oh, okay. So that really just got me thinking because I was so used to it. It just kind of was like, it kind of just shined the light on a problem.
Yes.
And I decided to just stop taking them. And what I did was I titrated myself down, like just kind of cut the pills and stuff. But, you know, in retrospect, I really wish I had consulted with a doctor, with a prescriber. And that's, you know, when I'm working with my own clients, I, you know, we are more careful about getting off the meds.
Okay.
Because I think you need a couple eyes watching over you while you do that, because it, it can be tricky.
Right.
But I lucked out and I was able to get off the meds just fine. And I slept pretty well for, you know, several years after. I wasn't like the greatest sleeper, but I did get rid of the insomnia. Mm-hmm. And then March of 2020 happened, and a lot of other people started, I know a lot of other people started to have problems with their sleep as well.
Yeah.
And I was very concerned that these emergent sleeping issues might propel me back into an episode of insomnia.
Okay.
So I started to do a lot of reading. I invested in an Oura ring to track my sleep.
Okay.
And I just kind of authentically, organically started sharing some things that I was learning about sleep on social media.
Yeah.
Come to find out, a lot of people in my circle were struggling too and found the tips really helpful.
Yeah.
And I guess almost a year went by after that. I guess this would be two summers ago. Mm-hmm. I just had a revelation. I've always been very interested in health. And to some degree, I wanted to translate my passion for health into a career, but I really did not know what I wanted to do. At one point after I had breast cancer, I thought about being a cancer coach.
Okay.
And then I was like, that's a little too heavy for me. And, you know, I really don't want to coach on weight loss. That's not interesting to me. And I was like, boom, I'm going to be a sleep coach. I'm going to help. And that's specifically women, you know, but I can help men too. But really just my heart goes out to the women who are struggling with their sleep. And I decided just then and there, I'm going to be a sleep coach. So then I started all of my coursework and spent a year studying and learning and getting certifications. And then last summer of 2021, I launched my sleep coaching practice. So it was quite an interesting journey to get to this point, but it's been quite an interesting ride.
Yeah, no, absolutely. it's so incredible how our own experiences, particularly in the health arena, you know, in my experience, become such doorways to, you know, wanting people to know this stuff that helps ourselves. I mean, I always used to walk around as I was early in my career too. I would be like, people need to know this, you know?
Yeah.
So I love it. It's, it was very organic, if you will, but you did mention my sidebar, you had a cancer, you had another health challenge.
Yeah.
So, that obviously shaped your approach to self-care and health in a big, big way as well. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So I had actually two cancer stories. Mm-hmm. The first one was 2018. I was diagnosed with stage one invasive ductal carcinoma of the breast.
Yep.
So stage one breast cancer, very small tumor.
Yep.
They recommended radiation or mastectomy or lumpectomy.
Lumpectomy.
And I just, you know, I have to just say that I come from a strong personal bias with traditional cancer treatments because both of my parents had cancer, lost their lives to cancer. And before they lost their lives, went through some intense, you know, chemos.
Okay.
And the traditional treatment. So in my eyes, because of my personal bias, I equated, you know, getting the traditional cancer treatments with like being very sick, losing weight, you know, just feeling awful.
Yes.
So I was having a real struggle trying to figure out what to do because I knew I had to do something. And I just through a friend heard about a cancer treatment center of doing integrative work in Cancun, Mexico called Hope for Cancer.
Oh, wow.
And I researched it, talked to a person who had gone there for her breast cancer. Mm. And it was just like, I knew intuitively that place was for me. I just felt a sense of peace, of relief, you know, like this is where I can go to get help. So I took off for Cancun for 3 weeks.
Wow.
My husband joined me. It was a gorgeous setting for healing. And basically I spent 6 days a week doing these integrative treatments. So, I mean, a few of them would be like vitamin C, IVs, coffee enemas, hyperbaric oxygen chamber,
right?
Hyperthermia,
yep.
Vibrational. I mean, all these really unique types of modalities that are not really standard of care in the US.
Sure.
And I had a great experience there. I came home, and then 3 months later, I went back for my follow-up visit to see if my home treatments and all the things that I'd done at the center worked. And my blood work came back great. I mean, I felt wonderful. I mean, quite frankly, I felt wonderful and healthy and strong throughout the whole process. I never felt sick at all, except for a couple times in that that very hot sauna. But, but that's, you know, that's sort of a blip on the radar. But what happened was the tumor didn't shrink. And I was very disappointed because I really thought that tumor would shrink. So I watched the tumor where I live, had, you know, just was kept getting ultrasounds and they were just not budging. So in late 2019, I got a lumpectomy. And then after that lumpectomy, they told me, oh, guess what? There's DCIS, which is a non-invasive cancer right up against the tumor we removed. We'd like to go back in and remove that. So 2 months later, I went in for a second lumpectomy. They got it all out. Everything was fine. End of story, except for there was a plot twist. Last summer, I had scheduled an appointment to have my breast implants removed. I'd had breast implants for 18 years and breast implants are not designed to stay in your body that long. I knew I wanted the breast implants out. So part of the process for that explant surgery is to have a mammogram. And I reluctantly agreed to have that mammogram. And I say reluctantly only because the mammogram missed my first cancer. So the mammogram, you know, I was like, I was not wanting to do it just because I felt like it was just, you know, I was like, what's the point? Like, they're not going to find anything. Like, I'm totally, good. Cause I made all these changes. Well, I go in there and they were very, very clear. They could see a bunch of DCIS on the opposite breast that had the lumpectomy. And I was like, there were some expletives I used on that table in front of the radiologist. And I was, I profusely apologized, but I just could not believe that it was back, like all the work I'd done. So I decided that I was going to have, instead of another lumpectomy, I felt like I could get a lumpectomy, but the problem with that is I could be playing this game of whack-a-mole every few years, wondering which breast another lump would show up in. So I decided to like make the most radical decision. I got a double mastectomy. And did not opt for reconstruction. I wanted, you know, I did not want to lose my breast, you know, because that's, you know, I was used to having some. And but the decision for me really was sort of rooted in the fact that I was originally intending to get the implants out. So to put the implants back in seemed kind of like not a rational decision. You know what I mean? And I explored fat transfer, but I didn't have enough fat. So they'd have to go back multiple times and harvest fat. And I was just like, this is just way too complicated. I'm just going to just live as a flat person. So I had my double mastectomy November of 21. And have been doing great since. I healed really quickly. I've gained my strength back. I'm feeling fantastic. So, you know, I guess the whole point of that story was, you know, I really do understand health challenges on a profound level, and which really fuels me to help other women with their health overall.
Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, it's, what's striking to me is that your story, is an example of there is no straight line, you know, when it comes to everybody's health experience, everybody's journey, you know, with health issues. But no matter what, you know, the idea is that you remained open, you remained curious, it didn't break you, you know, it you remained steadfast. And I could, you know, and you felt all, you know, the ups and downs of it. But what's interesting to me is you were very much engaged in your own health journey. And that, I think, regardless of whatever the outcome is, because that's really not up to us in some respect, you know, every step along the way, you felt empowered from what I can see is you were very conscious and very clear.
Yeah. And one other point to that is that I really pushed hard on in the first diagnosis to have more tests. Essentially, my husband is a medium. He's able to communicate with people who've departed. Yes. And the first part, the part of the story that I didn't share was that my husband received a message from my mother in 2018 that I needed to have my left breast examined.
Wow.
And so when I went to my doctor and tried to push for a test, it was just like, everything looks fine. I'm like, no, keep looking. I was very persistent that they just needed to keep testing. And they were shocked themselves to find the cancer because they were like, everything looked normal. Like nothing showed up in your mammogram and it looked just fine. And so one of my messages to women is to strongly advocate for yourself. And that could look like pushing for more tests, you know,
that's right.
No matter what you have, if you have, you know, a lot of practitioners will give a woman a thyroid panel and the woman still feels bad.
That's right.
And, you know, they didn't look at all the markers. she needed a new test, you know? So it's just like, we as women just, and men too, but like, we just can't settle for just you're fine, even though you know something is wrong. It's like, you have to listen to your intuition.
100%, you know? 100%. And what a difference it makes too, you know?
Yes.
Because even when our expectations might not be, you know, met with certain outcomes, we can at least feel that we wouldn't have done it any differently. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not someone shooting us into it. We're not trying to meet some external, you know, expectation, you know, or standard. It's authentically, you know, something that you knew in the moment, you know, was right for you. And so there's no regrets. I don't hear any regrets, you know.
I don't regret anything about this whole experience. I grew from it. I'm stronger for it. And I have more empathy for people who are struggling with their own health. So
Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Morgan. Yeah, I appreciate that. It's beautiful. So, you know, when it comes to then, you know, tying this back into foundational things for our health, we go back to sleep, right?
Yes.
And I'm sure through your own experience and then all the research that you've done on this, why are you so passionate about sleep? Like, why is it this?
Yes.
You know, why isn't it eat more greens?
Right. I know. Right? Right? Well, you know, I really believe that sleep is our superpower. Mm. And when you look at the pyramid of health or the pillars of health, rather, you've got these three things. You've got sleep, nutrition, and movement. Mm-hmm. And historically, nutrition and movement have really gotten the limelight.
Sure. You know,
there's a lot more Google searches for those topics. I like to say sleep has had a bad PR agent.
Exactly.
But I think the tide is turning because I really do feel, there's some bias here, but I really do feel like sleep is getting more press lately. I think, especially after 2020, there've been several reports on sleep post COVID. Mm. And I really do think it is the most important of the three pillars. Mm. Because if you think about it this way, you could not eat for like several weeks. Mm. You could never work out, although I wouldn't advise that. Mm-hmm. But the longest anyone has ever gone without sleep on record is 11 days. 11 days. And in fact, sleep is so critical to just living that studies that are looking at sleep deprivation will only allow subjects to be sleep deprived for two days or two nights. Mm. So that just goes to show you, like, it's not ethical, you know, it's an unethical thing to deprive people of sleep.
Yes.
So in my messaging on podcast and just in my social media content, I really like to focus more on the benefits of sleep because there's so much fear mongering, I think, out there talking about the negative consequences of sleep, of
Excellent.
Sleep deprivation.
Excellent.
You know,
yeah.
And yes, there are some negative consequences, but I just feel like it's more motivating for people to change their habits if they're given some positive reasons Agreed. Why they should like look into maybe changing their sleep health or their sleep habits.
Okay. So what are the sort of the top, you know, five reasons that, you know, you kind of shine the light on?
So there are a few definite ones. One is it's boosting your immune system. We do know that you're more likely to catch a cold if you haven't had enough sleep.
Absolutely.
Sleep also supports our brain function. We actually have something called the glymphatic system. I'm sure most people know what the lymphatic system is, but the glymphatic system with a G is something that they discovered like less than 10 years ago, very recently. It's essentially a lymphatic system in our brain. So when you are in the deeper stages of sleep, there are toxins that get flushed out of your brain during that time. So it's like a sort of just like a cleansing system of your brain while you sleep, which is
amazing.
Pretty amazing. Like amazing. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Sleep also helps with your mental well-being and your ability to manage stress.
Yeah.
Especially that REM sleep, that REM sleep, that helps you with emotional regulation. So people who are always like short-tempered, hot-headed, that could be potentially because they're not getting enough REM sleep.
Wow.
And then I guess the last thing I would say about benefits of sleep is that it keeps your hormones in check.
Big one.
Big time. So there's so many. I mean, they're countless, but those are just a few of the ones that I like to talk about. And you just feel better when you've had a great night of sleep. You feel like you can conquer the world when you had a really great night of sleep. So it's so true.
It really is. I think we can all relate, you know, if there's one thing for me, you know, I can, like you said, you know, some days you might not eat the best. You might, you know, other days you might miss a workout or two, right? But oh my God, if you have a bad night's sleep, it cascades and it informs everything. So, you know, it just shows you it really is, like you said, it's one of the three pillars, but it really is fundamental. 100%. Yes. I couldn't agree more. So, you know, as a health coach, as someone who works, you know, on an integrative level, we're always talking about root cause. And so, you know, to your point, your story was, you know, you were taking Ambien and, you know, no shame in relying on different, you know, modalities if they work, but there's some downsides to not addressing what's really going on when it comes to insomnia and difficulty sleeping, right?
Yes.
So what are some of the root causes that you help people understand when it comes to sleep?
Well, I feel like with my client population, a lot of the root cause for their insomnia really boils down to anxiety. And that's a big one. And a lot of people who are high drivers, type A personalities, they really have not allowed themselves the space and the time to decompress and to relax and to turn their brains off during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that is a really key reason for a lot of the people's insomnia that I see.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there are several other, you know, causes of insomnia. There can be, you know, hormone imbalances, there can be gut health issues.
Okay.
I mean, there can be a lot of things. There could be, you know, just really improper sleep habits, their sleep health. They're just, you know, they're doing some, and I don't want to say wrong as in judgmental, but they're just doing the wrong things, you know, that are not support, or I should say they're doing things that are not supporting their sleep.
Sure.
And they may not even be aware of it.
Okay. Okay.
So, you know, the root causes are many, but just from my experience and coaching the clients that I'm coaching, I definitely am finding that anxiety and the inability to manage stress.
Yeah.
We're living in a very, very stressful time.
Yeah.
That seems to be really a linchpin of the insomnia that I'm seeing.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So our mental health, you know, our psychological well-being, our emotional well-being, we tend to those, and then we don't have these downstream symptoms, you know, like, you know, insomnia and inability to sleep. So it's really important. So What about sleep aids then? You know, because I'm sure you start working with a client and perhaps by the time they get to you, you know, and investing in working with a sleep coach, which is awesome, right? They've probably done so many things. Like, you know, by the time they reach out to you, they've tried melatonin, they've tried Ambien. How do you help people kind of understand that there are more options on the menu?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, educating people about the sleep meds. And when you go to a doctor and complain about your sleep, the doctor, I mean, it's really not the doctor's fault, but they really, in the typical medical system these days, they've got about 10 minutes, 15 minutes to address your complaint. And in medical school, doctors are actually given about 2 hours of sleep science training.
I mean, I think that's less than nutrition.
But, I mean, it's, right? If you think about it, it's kind of crazy because we spend like a third of our lives sleeping and you get us 2 hours of your whole education on something you do a third of your life. It makes no sense.
Yeah, but totally.
So it's, again, it's not their fault. It's the system, right, which I hope will change, but I can totally see how easy it is for the doctor to pull out his or her script pad and just say, here's this medication. But the reality is that these medications that are indicated for insomnia are actually not indicated for long-term use. They're indicated for short-term use.
Okay.
A few weeks.
Okay.
Yet they're often given out, as in what happened in my case, it's sort of like refill is needed. This is not a refill is needed type of medication.
Okay.
And so if your doctor does give a prescription for a sleep medication, they really should be giving you like a time frame with which you will be going off that medication. Mm-hmm. You know, there should be a plan in place.
Wow.
I mean, they do have their place. They do have their place.
Okay.
As far as like, if you are in a crisis, you know, you're going through a divorce, there was a death in the family. Yes. Maybe you're traveling.
Right.
You know, and that's fine. But like to, you know, be reliant on them long-term, they do, you know, have their, you know, negative effects over long-term. And again, I don't like to be the fear monger.
So sure. And I understand.
I will point to a certain sleep scientist named Dr. Matthew Walker, who is probably the most well-known sleep scientist in the country. Mm. He wrote a book called Why We Sleep. Mm. And he goes in depth about, you know, the longer term consequences of sleep medications.
Okay.
And really what, I mean, just to kind of give the broad brushstrokes is that when you are taking a sleep medication, you are not actually getting restorative sleep. You're more in a sedative state. And sedation is not sleep. And when you look at studies of people who are taking sleep medications versus placebo, you will see that there is a slight decrease in the amount of time it takes people to fall asleep, you know, slight, but there's more of a subjective report that, oh, I slept better when when you ask the patient. But when you look at their sleep data from, you know, their brain waves, there's really no difference.
Incredible.
So, and I will share one quote from Matthew Walker about Ambien.
Yeah.
This is the scariest thing I'll say on the whole podcast. So,
okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll get it out of the way now. So this is a quote. He said, Ambien induced sleep caused a 50% weakening or unwiring of the brain cell connections originally formed in learning. In doing so, Ambien laced sleep became a memory eraser.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, yikes. I can definitely say that during the time when I was taking Ambien, I was not as sharp. Mm. I was more forgetful for sure.
Okay.
So yeah, that's sort of my spiel with the whole sleep medication. And if people do want to like dig deeper, that's a great book to really get more information.
That's incredible. About Thank the you.
Downsides of it. Yeah.
Well, the whole point of, like you said, the glymphatic system is inoperable, you know, when you're under sedation and not sleeping. Yeah. So just that alone is so profound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Melatonin. Where does that fall in?
Yeah, melatonin is a pretty safe supplement. It's gotten a lot of press lately. Basically, melatonin is sort of like taking a dose of sunset. It kind of tricks your body into feeling like it's nighttime. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really put you to sleep as much as it really kind of tells your body it's time to sleep.
Okay.
So they did a study in 2013 that looked at like 1,600 folks. And this was kind of interesting. They found that people who took melatonin supplements fell asleep 7 minutes faster and mm-hmm. increased their overall sleep time by 8 minutes, which honestly is not that impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not like anything to write home about.
Right. Right.
But a lot of people do, you know, a lot of people do take it because they feel like it helps. And it could be a placebo effect to some extent. Really, the research is more supportive of using melatonin for circadian rhythm disruptions or jet lag.
Okay.
Someone does want to start with melatonin, though, I would definitely suggest starting at a low dose, like 0.5 milligrams to 1 milligram.
Okay.
When I'm looking around, you know, shopping online or looking for clients is that most of the melatonin supplements start at like 3 milligrams.
Oh, how interesting.
Which could be a little bit high for some people.
Yeah.
You could have some side effects in the morning. They're not too bad, but I mean, everyone's different. It's very bio-individual. And they did a study where they looked at a bunch of melatonins. They kind of pulled random ones mm-hmm. off the shelves. Mm-hmm. And they found that 70% of those melatonin supplements had wide variation from their label claims, ranging from like 83% less than the amount listed to like 478% more.
Oh, quality.
Yeah. If you are going to choose melatonin as a sleep aid, I would suggest starting the very small microdose, that 0.5 to 1 milligrams.
Yep.
And look for something called the USP label. I'm forgetting what that stands for, but it basically ensures that what is advertised on the bottle is actually what's in the pill.
Yeah. Okay. You
know, so going through maybe an online dispensary instead of just going to, you know, your regular like grocery store and picking mm-hmm. a random one off the shelf.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's really, really good advice because we have a lot of questions about that.
Yeah. You know? But I mean, I actually, you know, I have dabbled with melatonin. It didn't really move the needle for me.
Okay.
But melatonin is one of those things I said that it does get a lot of bad press. In fact, there was like some kind of study recently that was talking about how children had been overdosing on it in the past couple years. Wow. Essentially, I think the issue was parents weren't locking it up. And some of those melatonins are gummies. So they're very attractive to kids.
Oh my gosh.
You know, that's not anything against melatonin. That's more of a control issue at home, but
sure.
Melatonin is in different areas of medicine considered a very potent antioxidant, often used in high doses for cancer.
Interesting.
And so there's certain uses for high dose melatonin that is very, very groundbreaking. And I think we'll start hearing more about it at some point soon. But you know, as far as sleep is concerned, low doses, probably pretty safe for most people. It's kind of, you know, your mileage may vary as far how much use you'll get out of it, but it's, you know, I'd say it's fairly benign. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fairly benign. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. All right. That's good. That's really helpful. Okay. So now it's a challenge, you know, for, as you mentioned, anxiety, there's hormone imbalance and just those two potential root causes come at a perfect storm during menopause and perimenopause. And, you know, this is oftentimes when clients that I work with, you know, it's really kind of that perfect storm, right? So hormone imbalance is causing them to have insomnia. They've never been a great sleeper to begin with, you know, then, you know, it's sort of this, it's this cycle, you know, it's like they know sleep is important, but they're waking up, you know, with all these menopausal, you know, hot flashes and all of this disruption. Where do you start with your clients? Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of reasons for hot flashes in menopause. Sometimes certain medications like SSRIs or aspirin or acetaminophen can trigger them. Also, caffeine and alcohol can trigger them. I mean, I know personally, like if I've had a couple glasses of wine, I will probably wake up hot at some point during the night. The shifting hormone levels in the body, you know, can contribute to those wake ups. So there's really like not one quick fix to it, but I'll just kind of share some things that could potentially work for different people.
Yes.
Some are, you know, easier than others, but one thing that I would say is start with a cooler bedroom. Mm-hmm. We actually do need to lower our body temperature by a couple of degrees to get good sleep.
Okay.
So, you know, I would say 65 degrees is a good temperature for your bedroom.
Great.
There's a product that I've been using for over a year that I just absolutely love. And this is a little bit more of an investment, but it's a cooling mattress pad by a company called Silly Sleep.
Okay.
It is a game changer. Wow. I mean, even my husband loves it.
Yeah.
And he's obviously not in menopause.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a fantastic product. A little, you know, an investment, of course.
Sure.
As far as sleepwear, I would consider like bamboo fabric tends to be more cooling, as well as bamboo sheets.
Okay.
Something that you can do for like, you know, long-term all day long is, and this is not talked about a lot, so I feel like it's kind of important, is eating for the whole day to balance your blood sugar, right?
This so is key.
Very key. So I mean, a few guidelines for that would be when you eat breakfast is not to have what they call a naked carb. Like a naked carb would be a pancake or a
bagel,
a bagel or a bowl of, God forbid, Frosted Flakes.
Right.
So when you're going to have breakfast, you have a protein and a healthy fat and maybe a little carb. And then continue with that sort of balance plate approach throughout the whole day. Because what happens is quite often when our blood sugar is not balanced all day long, that continues into the night. And those 3 a.m. wake-ups are triggered by sort of a cortisol and adrenaline response, which wakes us up. So that is not fun. And then yesterday I heard on a really awesome podcast for women over 50, they were talking about a study showing that when you have increased lean body mass, mm-hmm. essentially having more muscle, mm-hmm. reduces hot flashes and night sweats.
Interesting.
So that would mean basically strength training.
Yeah.
Could help you with reducing those hot flashes.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're trying all those things, like you're doing all those hacks and you know, your mileage may vary with some and not others.
Sure.
You know, definitely talk to somebody about HRT. I'm not an expert in HRT, but I know people in my circles who are.
Hmm.
And, you know, the reality is we shouldn't suffer. We shouldn't, you know, we can try things. And if we've kind of gone up the ladder of interventions and nothing seems to work,
yeah,
you know, there's no shame in getting, you know, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, no, I think this is great. And I love that the options on the menu are deal with our immediate sort of sleep environment and our, you know, and also just in our general self-care, you know, when it comes to looking at our overall health. And I'm so glad you talked about blood sugar. To me, blood sugar rules, you know, when it comes to any downstream symptom that, you know, you mentioned binge eating, you mentioned, you know, any kind of fatigue or even our mental health, you know, blood sugar is imperative, you know, getting off that blood sugar roller coaster. Yeah. And I love the fact you brought up also, because a lot of women or men, women, they wake up and they're like, oh, you know, I wake up because I have to go to the bathroom. So I try not to drink a lot of water. And I remember reading studies that say it's actually there, that can be the case. But statistically, it's really not, you know, in the majority. Your bladder is not the issue. You're already awake and then you're awake and you're like, oh, my body needs to go use the bathroom.
Yes, you know? That's exactly it. And, you know, continuing on that theme of blood sugar balance, there is an incredible book that came out probably 3 or 4 months ago called The Glucose Revolution.
Mm.
And in that book, this woman, she has her handle is Glucose Goddess on Instagram.
Cool.
She has an amazing account where she does these continuous glucose monitor experiments where she'll show you her experiment using one food, and then she'll tweak the food. So maybe she'll add fat to it, and you can see the glucose curve kind of like level off instead of spike. And so I've really started helping a lot of my clients with these like very, very simple hacks to manage their blood sugar. I mean, something as simple as taking a 20-minute walk after a meal makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I actually have done these experiments with glucose monitors, these CGMs that just go on your arm. And I see the difference. Like I ate a whole pizza. It would happen. You know, I'll do anything for science.
Take one for the team.
Exactly. And so I did an experiment where I ate the whole pizza and I did nothing. And then 2 weeks later, I had the same pizza at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, walked for 20 minutes briskly. Uh-huh. And you could see the glucose spike reduced. It's flattened out a bit, you know. So
right.
Things like having a salad before a meal, or what they call a green starter.
Mm.
So having your salad or your green followed by your protein, followed by your carb, reduced glucose spikes by like 70% for a meal. Now you can't always do that at a meal. Like if you're at a restaurant, it's kind of hard to deconstruct, but if you're at home and you're serving yourself, you know, a vegetable and a starch and a protein, you can actually control the order in which you eat those foods.
Sure.
Without a problem. So definitely, I definitely recommend that book.
That's great. No, I'll definitely include that and the other link you put in the show notes as well. That's amazing. Okay. So again, going back to, you know, the coaching work that you do, these are really, you know, very, very useful pieces of information and suggestions. What do you find as a coach to be the biggest obstacles to actually trying any of these or sticking out, you know, long enough with them?
Oh, wow. So I guess, you know, I think the biggest obstacle that I'm finding with my female clients is the alcohol use.
Yeah.
It's hard. And I mean, I've been, you know, I've struggled on and off over the years with my intake, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm on a very nice stretch of no alcohol right now, and I'm going to ride it out. But I do find that it is very, very difficult for females who are having wine almost nightly to give that up, you know?
Okay.
And really, I mean, it's as harsh as it sounds, if you're not willing to make some changes with that alcohol, it's going to be hard to move the needle with your sleep.
Great advice.
You know, so, you know, sort of the hacks like that I used when I was drinking wine that did help somewhat. If so, you know, I realize not everyone is going to want to give up alcohol, but if you do want to have alcohol, here's what I suggest is, they say sort of like the typical sleep hygiene protocol is like stop drinking 2 to 3 hours before bed. But I'm going to go a step farther and say, stop drinking alcohol 4 to 5 hours before you go to bed.
Okay. Good.
So,
good.
That way you can really clear most of the alcohol out of your system. And then, there's a wine that is called dry farm wine, and it is basically a zero residual sugar wine and a low alcohol wine.
Uh-huh.
So I've done some experiments using that wine. I've had better sleep scores versus conventional wine, which would be like wine that you'd have in a restaurant.
Okay.
You know, with some pesticides and some things. So the dry farms, they take out all that stuff and they screen. They're doing a lot of screening. So, so, you know, if you don't have access to that brand, because some states won't allow it to be shipped to them. I found out from another woman I was being interviewed by, but if you go to like your local Whole Foods, you can look for the best choice would be like an organic wine.
Organic. Okay. You know? So just cleaner. And then if you can find something that's lower in sugar, lower in alcohol, good direction.
Mm-hmm. Cleaner. And then just think if you're going to use a guideline, think more of like happy hour versus nightcap. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
So think I know it sounds kind of strange, but like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Have a drink at 4. If you're going to bed at 10, that alcohol is pretty much washed out.
Okay.
So it's probably not going to impact your sleep as much as it would if you were having, you know, dinner out with people and you had drinks at dinner from like 7 to 8, you were drinking, and then you go to bed at 10, you'll probably wake up with a hot flash.
Yeah.
If you're at a certain age, to me, it's not worth it anymore. Once we get to a certain age, our bodies just cannot process alcohol the way they used to.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's really helpful. Okay. Meditation and breath work.
Oh yeah. I'm a big fan of both. In fact, I like to talk to my clients about meditation and breath work, not only just for like, when you think of meditation and breath work, you sometimes think about doing that at night, like just meditating at night. But I like to talk about mindfulness snacks. So that's essentially doing like something related to meditation or breath work in the morning, sometime during the day, like lunchtime, and then in the evening. Mm-hmm. So taking those like maybe 10-minute breaks, you know, 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. Because like what I was sharing earlier is that women who are, you know, very, very busy, type A producers, that's like kind of most of the women that I see, their brains are so busy at night, so busy during the day.
They can't settle at night,
which is the cause of so many of their problems, that anxiety, that rumination. So I'm a big proponent of using meditation and breath work throughout the day to mitigate that stress, to raise your HRV, to get your parasympathetic nervous system in balance and check. Right. And the wonderful thing about meditation is that it's free.
Yep. And there's downside.
There's no bad side effects.
Nope.
There's so many apps you can use that are free. I personally like Insight Timer. They seem to have the most apps. The most meditations.
Yes.
And then breath work. Your breath is free. Yay. Free hacks.
Yeah.
But there is an app that I like to use. It's called Breath Work. So it's breath and then WRK. So it's like breath work without the O in it. And they have a free version. And what I like about it is it shows you the science behind each breath work, like each exercise. And it tells you exactly how to do it. You can see this sort of like little circle kind of expand and contract with your breath. So it keeps you on pace.
Nice.
Right. So great. I really love that app.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Big fan of both.
Excellent. Yeah. And I like what I'm getting in a lot of your, you know, recommendations is that, again, it's not a quick fix, not a magic bullet. It's about sort of a recalibration of how you move and groove throughout your day, right? How you eat, how you breathe, how the breaks that you take, you know, being really mindful about, you know, what are you nourishing your body or fueling your body with again? And this is really what's really key is, you know, so many people, and you and I are both on the same page, you know, weight loss, not very exciting because weight loss is a downstream symptom. You know, so a lot of people come through the door or the main health concern of weight loss. But when, you know, I always say this and people get a little freaked out. They say, you know, you can't really do anything to change your weight. What? But you can change 100% of all the things that are potentially driving you to have excess weight on one.
Right.
And that's where you put your intention and your focus. So it's the same thing with your sleep. You know, is we got to look at the nutrition. We got to look at, you know, the way that you're taking care of yourself throughout the entire day. Mm-hmm. So that's huge. That's huge. Yes. It's an investment. I mean, like, you know, it's an investment. So, okay. So I'm going to ask you, you know, what is the biggest takeaway that you want our listeners to have from this conversation?
Yeah. Well, the takeaway would be that there are so many free things you can do to help your sleep. And one thing that we really didn't get into this territory, but it's an amazing sleep tip that not everyone knows about, at least not yet.
Okay.
I think you're going to start hearing more about this in the future, but it is the value of getting morning sunlight.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and when I say morning sunlight, I'm talking about getting sun within like the first hour of waking up, right? What if you're looking at the sun without sunglasses, you must make sure you're not wearing your sunglasses because your eyes need to hit the light, right? The sunlight triggers something in your suprachiasmatic nucleus and your hypothalamus to trigger a bunch of responses that sort of level out your circadian rhythm,
Okay.
And encourage the cascade of different hormones throughout the day. So if you, it's really your circadian pacemaker. Mm. When you're kicking off that circadian pacemaker when you're getting that morning sunlight. And I would recommend it for about 15 minutes at least.
Awesome.
And you can even sort of kind of amp that up with a walk in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to get, if you don't want to walk or whatever, you could just sit on your porch. But I mean, if folks listening out there, just try it for a week. It really, it's a game changer. And again, it's a free hack.
Wow.
Sunlight.
That's profound. Well, again, you're talking about all these things that, you know, traditional medicine and ancient cultures for, you know, forever and ever have long known. And we've, yes. We've gotten so far away from just that basic, you know, self-care. So thank you for, you know, highlighting. I love the science. This is so cool. As you said, this is what, I guess, why you're so excited. There's just so much more research happening actively on sleep. Yeah.
And the whole circadian rhythm, you know, field is just, you're going to see a lot more in the next couple of years about the circadian medicine. There's a book called The Circadian Code by Dr. Sachin Panda. Amazing book. So I would recommend that too for anyone who wants to kind of amp up their health and sleep at the same time.
Oh, Morgan, this has been so, so enriching. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Where can our listeners find you, get to work with you, learn more about you?
Well, my website is morganadamswellness.com is my website. And I'm on Instagram quite a bit doing stories and reels and try to do some fun stuff too. It's morganadams.wellness on Instagram.
Awesome. This has been amazing.
Thanks
okay.
so much.
Thank you. And best of luck with everything that you do. I'm so excited to see all the things that you're doing in the future.
Thank you, Christine.
All right.